you know, we do sort of see like, oh, like, I don't think a lot of the network shows are talking about politics that much. Mm. You know, that was something I really enjoyed at my last gig. And also with something like that Elizabeth Warren thing, that was something we came up on the day, came up with on the day.
Yeah.
And it gives the office, it gives it a fun energy when you're sort of doing something day of and you have a lot less time to sort of, you know, road test it, which you can do with other things. And I think as we get into the political season where there are more stories that our audience is hip to, I think we'll try to do that more and more. It's really fun for us.
Breaking news in a way, right? I mean,
absolutely.
The newsier it is.
The monologue is always a nice place to sort of have very small distillations of news stories. But I think once we get to the desk, if, you know, two or three times a week, we sort of do a little bit of a longer look at something. I think that's a nice construction of a show.
Once we get to the desk, is that like shorthand for after the monologue, before we get to the interviews, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we call it the desk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, in a weird way, you know, because we usually try to do two acts of comedy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of monologue, you move over to the desk, you say hello to the band, you talk to Fred, you can hopefully get a piece of comedy in there. Then you go to first commercial, and ideally there's another act of comedy there, and then you start getting to the guests. The nice thing for me is once you get to the guests, it's like all the work's over for me.
Yep.
Then it's just talking to people, and I find that, especially since we do try to only book people that I'm interested in talking to, then it's just incredibly fun.
7 minutes goes pretty fast.
7 minutes flies by. I'm very jealous of people like yourself, or, you know, we live in an era now of podcasts,
yeah,
and people who get to sit down for anywhere from an hour to 90 minutes. You know, I did Howard Stern the other day. I felt like,
oh, man,
you know, it was like I was at a therapist by the end of it. You know, I talked about so much. And the reality is that is one of the limitations of the late night show, is how fast 7 minutes goes.
It's so interesting to me that you were a guy who spent years, other than doing Weekend Update, right, spent years writing for other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, behind the scenes. And now, you're the man.
Yeah. It's probably one of the hardest parts of the transition. Even at Weekend Update, where, you know, my name was in the title and I got to call myself Seth Meyers, but they were, you know, one of my favorite parts about doing it was, you know, sitting next to a Bill Hader, a Kate McKinnon, a Bobby Moynihan, and basically just playing straight man to them. So even at the part of SNL where I was technically the star, I also enjoyed, you know, dishing out assists rather than trying to go to the basket. So that's been a weird part of the show, is just remembering, oh, yeah, this only works if people at home like spending time with me.
Do you have fun?
I do. And there are nights where I don't, yeah, and I have to pretend. But on nights when I have fun, it is – I can't express to you how fast the hour goes. And I will say that before I know whether it's a good or a bad show, I definitely am smiling backstage before I walk out every night. Just the very fact that, you know, in this day and age, you know, a network has basically said to me, hey, we're going to give you an hour every day. Do with it what you will. And there's really not much more you could ask for than that.
Seth Meyers, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
We all set? Lovely.
Really nice. Can I get a picture of you guys
together? Of course.
That was, what, 7 minutes plus or minus? There is another 20 or so online. Lots of good stuff we had to leave out because it is, sadly, only a half-hour show. You can find it all at marketplace.org. Final note on the way out today. If you watched the Masters on Sunday, you know Jordan Spieth had a very good day. Arguably, his main sponsor, Under Armour, had a better one. Back in January, they signed Spieth to a 10-year deal, guaranteeing that the only brand name Spieth is going to wear on the course, minus his Titleist glove, will be Under Armour. And if you saw it, that's all he was wearing over the weekend. A key provision of that deal, Under Armour doesn't make golf clubs, which means Spieth didn't have to change clubs to make the deal, which is no small thing. Also, update on pimento cheese. Have not and don't plan to actually have one, no.
Marketplace is supported by Arizona State University, with more than 70 campus degrees now available 100% online at online.asu.edu. by Kronos, with cloud-based workforce management solutions designed for organizations to maximize their most valued asset, their workforce. Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. And by Nuance Power PDF, designed for powerful business functionality that's scalable for the entire organization. Nuance.com/PowerPDF. PDF uncompromised.
All right, we got to go. The Dow off 80 points today, 0.4%. The NASDAQ down 7 points, that's a 10%. The S&P 500 dropped 9 points, 0.4%. Seriously, go check out the rest of that Seth Meyers interview. There was some good stuff in there. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonner, Daisy Palacios, Gina Delvac, and Mukta Mohan. I'm Kai Rizal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This
Theater at Latitude 58 presents William Shakespeare's The Tempest. An exiled sorceress, a shipwreck, a magical island, spirits, love, hate, revenge, justice. Come experience the beauty of Shakespeare's final play, April 17th, 18th, and 19th at McTheatres Hall. Tickets are available on Vendini, at Hearthside Books, and at the door. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
You're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau.
Join friends and neighbors for the annual Empty Bowls benefit at Centennial Hall on Sunday, April 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. Empty Bowls, a fundraiser for the Glory Hole, features delicious all-you-can-eat soups from your favorite local restaurants, fresh-baked cookies, live music, a silent auction, the always-fun dessert auction, and beautiful bowls from local artisans. Tickets are available at both Hearthside Books locations and at the door. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole.
Welcome to Mind Over Matter. Imagine that a close friend of your daughter comes to you in a panic and confides that the previous evening they were at a party and lost consciousness. They woke up in the middle of the night and felt something awful had happened. What advice would you give them? Or perhaps a child you know, as a neighbor, whispers to you that someone has touched their private parts. What should you do? Tonight's show will focus on sexual abuse and look at how attitudes and services have changed over time. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. This evening, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, the director of AWARE in Juneau, is my guest. Welcome, Sarah Lynn.
Thank you, Elaine.
First of all, so we can place you in time and space, and I, of course, know that AWARE is AWARE. Could you explain what the acronym stands for?
AWARE stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies.
Do you know who came up with that?
Who?
I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I thought maybe you knew.
I'm going to guess it's Karen Robinson.
It could have been, right? Because
yeah.
She's the founding director.
She's the founding director. So
yep.
I'm going to guess, which is really clever. Has any other battered women's shelter come up with this acronym in the States? Are we the only one?
We're the only AWARE.
We're the only AWARE.
There are others, like WISH is Women in Safe Homes.
Yeah. And what's SITCA?
SITCA is called Safe Sitkins Against Family Violence, S-A-F-V.
V, SAFE.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ah, well,
yeah.
That's a great acronym, AWARE.
AWARE, isn't
it? Because it really covers domestic violence and sexual assault as well in the title. And we're going to focus on the latter. But AWARE is a battered women's shelter and so much more. Could you tell us what are your services for victims of incest and sexual abuse? What does AWARE provide?
Sure. So AWARE provides, number one, is the crisis line and confidentiality. So I say these first because if somebody wanted to call, you know, you open the show beautifully with some examples or questions, like what would you do if? And, of course, you might not know what to do. And what you could do is call AWARE 24 hours a day. Our crisis line number is 586-1090. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-478-1090. Someone could call that any time of the day or night. Don't have to give your name. And at the same time, if you give your name, it's confidential information. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if a child is being abused, we are mandated reporters,
right,
because part of our job is to make sure kids are safe.
Right.
Nonetheless, we are there to listen. We are there to provide options. And we are there to help problem solve if need be. So, additionally, if somebody needs help with their report, or wants to know, again, what they can do or how to move forward, how to talk to a child, perhaps they have some concerns, we can help with that. AWARE goes into the schools and does personal safety education.
What grade?
Pre-K through, actually, even at university level.
Okay.
Yes. So, and
you mean at UAS? You go
at UAS, right.
Oh, great. In the dorms?
I don't know about in the dorm, but sometimes special presentations.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Because one of my jobs when I was a therapist at the University of Washington Student Health Center is I would actually go into the dorms and talk about, this is, can you imagine, this is like 35 years ago, 40 years ago, early on, because we had started Rape Relief, of course, in Seattle. And I would go in and do sexual assault awareness, but wasn't as, let's just say the background, it was a new field.
Right.
So we had to kind of make it up.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. But again, you're focused on the safety, right? Because,
yeah,
right, how did this all start? Women thought it was their own individual experience of victimization.
Right.
Until they talked to each other and realized, oh my goodness, this happened to me and you and you and you and
And it was thanks to the early women's movement, Take Back the Night March, that occurred all around the country.
Right.
And I remember I was in graduate school at the time and was one of the organizers of the Take Back the Night March. We were very active. The women's movement was really moving.
Yeah.
And so the Take Back the Night March, and this is very much like women coming together and saying, we're not the cause of rape. Do you remember long ago in the Kesnet? Is it Kesnet at Golda Meir spoke, and there was a discussion about a curfew, and it was suggested that women not be allowed out at night after, I don't know what time, 9 p.m. or something. And she spoke up. And Golda Meir spoke up and said, why should women stay home at night? Let's keep all the men home, and then there won't be a problem.
Right. That's beautiful.
Is that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she got it. She spoke up. That's why we need women in office.
Right.
Okay.
That's a good one. I didn't know that about her. I know, I know other wonderful things about her, and
yeah,
I'm going to add that.
Yeah, is that great?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is great. And, you know, partly men have a tremendous role to play here, right?
I'd say so.
In terms of, they can choose to be violent or to not be violent.
Yeah.
Right?
And they can choose to raise sons and daughters to be safe.
Right.
And talk about it. Really, we can change our culture.
Yes.
And in a culture where sexual violence is acceptable, and we certainly know that that's in the case of military training and war. A friend of mine did a little bit of research in her graduate work on the training, the chance that soldiers, and I don't know if it's changed since women have entered the military, but the chance that soldiers would sing when they were doing training, and they were very violent and very sexist. And of course, war is violent and always sexist.
Right.
So, back to prevention, not prevention, but the early days of going into colleges, and you have somebody from AWARE go to UAS, and you have somebody from AWARE go to the high school.
Yes. And middle school and elementary.
And do you have a regular time, like you're always part of the third grade curriculum and the ninth grade curriculum, or is it just more ad hoc?
You know, in elementary schools, we're part of every grade, so generally like 2 weeks at a time at an elementary school, giving kids a couple of lessons. Age, of course, age appropriate, so that each year we're building on what they've learned previously. Mm-hmm. And high school is not every grade. So middle school, we try to do most of the middle schools. And actually, the person who's working with middle and high school is Dawn Colden, who also does a lot with theater. And so she's working quite a bit with kids with theater as a way of learning about healthy relationships.
You know, this brings up a question I think all parents have. When and how is it appropriate to talk to your son and daughter about safe touch, unsafe touch, how to protect themselves? If it's done in the schools, does that mean that parents don't have to do it? I think there'd be a lot of parents who are listening tonight who wonder, should I just ignore it? Or I want to protect my child. What should I do? What would you advise parents?
I would advise parents that information is power. You know, the more that kids have information, they can use that to keep themselves safe. So if they know it's not okay for someone to touch them in places where their bathing suit covers, if in fact someone touches them there, they can report that to their parent. You know, they can say, hey, that's not okay. Even if it was an accident or whatever, but then children know their body is their own. You know, and you can start quite young.
Right, because you don't have to bring up sexual assault. You could just say, you don't have to use the word sexual assault or rape. You can just say, so is that what you say? Wherever your bathing suit is.
Yeah. What your bathing suit covers, right, and your body is your own.
Yeah.
Right? So nobody has the right to touch your body without uh-huh. you saying that that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. It's empowering, right?
It is empowering, and I picture mothers of 2- and 3- and 4-year-olds chuckling right now because a classic statement a kid makes is, I am the boss of me.
Right.
I'm the boss of me. And boy, you just tell them, I'm the boss of me. I always love that.
It's a good one.
It's a very good one.
Yes.
Okay. Anything else among your services? So rape victims.
Oh, sure. We also have advocates who work with victims and family members. So whether it's a child who's the victim or an adult who's a victim, they can, again, call AWARE. Maybe mm-hmm. they want to have a or need to have a medical exam. They want to make sure their body's okay.
Yeah.
So AWARE can provide support and accompaniment for that.
To the ER?
To the ER. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes we go to the Child Advocacy Center when children are being interviewed, if that's helpful, you know, to support a
family. What's the Child
family.
Advocacy Center?
It's a center where forensic exams and interviews are done with children.
So forensic exam, meaning verbal exams and interviews.
It could be verbal as well as medical.
Oh, as well as medical. And there's a place for that in Juneau? Where is that?
There is a place for that. It's in Jordan Creek area.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if someone's at the hospital, you know, maybe somebody calls the police first or goes to the hospital first or contacts AWARE first. We, pardon me, are part of a SART team, SART uh-huh. standing for Sexual Assault Response Team, where people come together, medical providers, advocates, law enforcement, if the victim agrees to have law enforcement. Again, an adult victim can agree or not. A child, there's some mandated reporting that needs to happen. Mm-hmm. And so we can help a person move through the process and understand the process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they think they want to have an exam, and at a certain point they become uncomfortable with it and don't want to collect evidence or whatever. You mm-hmm. know, that person is in control, and we're there to support their choices.
Yeah, and to inform them that they don't have to notify the police if they don't want to.
That's right.
I was wondering, if somebody had a question, they were a little on the edge of whether they and this would be an issue that was mandated for report, and they were a little bit queasy about using names. Could they call AWARE and just say, I'm not going to use any names, but I have a question. Would you consider, you know, they want to know, is this reportable? Is this sexual assault? Or they just want to know, hey, listen, I don't want this reported, but I'd like services. Well, once they get services, of course, it's reported.
Right.
But I don't want this reported, but I just want information. So I'm not going to give you any names. Would that be okay?
Totally fine.
Okay. Because I think that may be a step to opening up.
Right.
Because I think a lot of people would be afraid, for example, if it was molestation by a close family member. You know, one of the questions would be, what's going to happen?
Right.
If I report this?
Yes.
What would happen? You know, and fear, you know, would the person's life be ruined? Is this considered sexual molestation, sexual assault?
Right.
And they could at least move in that one step, which is really wonderful, and not have to take the whole leap.
Right.
But it might prepare them to take the
right.
leap.
Right. And I appreciate you asking that, because I think sometimes people might perceive like something feels funny or not quite right, and maybe they just want to check it out with, like you said, not spilling everything,
right.
but some significant piece that they want to reality check about.
Well, let's use the example of a child, a neighbor child, whispers to you that somebody touched their private parts. Maybe they had a class that AWARE gave, and maybe for one reason or another, they didn't want to tell their mom because they were afraid they'd get in trouble or something. And so they whisper it to you, and they say, Uncle John, touch where my bathing suit is. Well, obviously, that would just not be something that you would instinctively, as a layperson, know what to do. And so what's great is you could call AWARE. You don't have to name names, and you get all the information you want. So you know what's going to happen, what is in their opinion, in AWARE's opinion, the safest or most ethical thing to do, what's going to happen to the alleged offender, you know, what's going to happen to the victim, and so on and so forth.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, as much as we know. You know, we're happy to share information.
And then in the second example, where your daughter or a close friend said that they were at a party, they got really drunk, but they don't think they got drunk, but they feel somebody had put a pill in their drink or something, and they were passed out, and they woke up, and their clothes were in disarray, and they just felt something was terrible happened. They felt bad. What advice would you give that young woman?
If that person could call AWARE, I would invite them to call. Or to come by, meet with someone, and to just listen to them.
Yeah.
And see what they wanted to do or where they wanted to move with it and what was coming up for them. Were they having more memories or flashbacks, if you will?
And because they're adults, there's no mandatory reporting, of course.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, but really honor each person's experience. You know, as adults, they get to make those choices.
Well, when we started Rape Relief in Seattle, we were training advocates, and again, we were starting from scratch. We didn't have any of the materials that I discovered on the Sexual Assault Awareness Month website today. I mean, we didn't have anything. But I remember we used some common sense. And and one thing that we had to learn for ourselves would be the pros and cons for each individual. We didn't know the pros and cons, but that there are consequences to reporting to the police. And the consequences are you start going through the legal system. And depending on how emotionally fragile and many, many other circumstances, it is possible that somebody would choose not to report it to the police.
Right.
Now, other people may not understand that.
Right.
And think that they're doing a wrong thing. You must protect other women. You must report it to the police. But it's been a long time since I've worked as an advocate for rape victims. So maybe you're more up to date. And hopefully, maybe the process has changed. If let's say, you know, a 25-year-old victim of stranger rape. Asked too, what's going to happen if I report it to the police? What would you tell them?
Well, you know, it's really interesting question, Elaine, because you said of stranger rape.
Yes.
Because most rape is not done by a stranger. Most often, the woman knows who the perpetrator is. And I'm going to say women, though, of course, men are raped as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think we can say what will happen if you report this and how it moves forward. So you can report this. The police will investigate it. The police will look for evidence. They will talk to the perpetrator, most likely. They will pursue this.
Okay, but this is stranger rape in this case.
And that could be stranger or not stranger. But if you think about, you know, I find the police in Juneau to be very good.
I believe it.
In addressing sexual assault.
Are they trained?
I think they are well trained. They are excellent partners.
Do you train them? Do you go in and train them?
We work with them some.
Okay.
Yep.
We used to train them in Seattle because there was no training.
Yeah. And now there are week-long SART trainings for SART teams, and JPD is sending officers, and we're sending advocates, so there's building that relationship.
Wonderful. What if a trained officer is not on duty for a rape case? Do they call them in?
You know, they're all trained to some degree.
Okay.
And then the detectives are...
And then
have additional
it wouldn't
training.
Be just on an emergency basis. They could the most trained ones could do it. Okay, so go on. What is the process then?
So the woman has a choice to report to the police or not, right?
Yeah. But you're
saying
she does.
She reports it,
but she wants to know what will happen.
What
if
will
I
happen?
Report.
So if she reports, the police will investigate.
Mm-hmm.
It will potentially go to the district attorney, who will make a decision about prosecuting or not.
How does he make that decision?
Well, I think there are a number of factors that come forward, but they need to know that a crime has been committed and to be able to prove that a crime has been committed.
You mean they need to believe that a crime has been committed?
Well, I think often they believe a crime has been committed without having evidence.
Got it.
Yeah.
It's okay. They think it's a real case, a valid complaint.
Well, they're often valid complaints, but how do you prove? So, you know, the thing about a stranger that's interesting is I think more people, pardon me, in general, people have a different response to it being a stranger, right? Because it's a stranger, it's a kind of a shocking thing. You know, sometimes when it's not a stranger, the acquaintance may say, oh, we've had sex before, we're in a relationship,
right.
I'm not sure why she's saying this,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was consensual,
right.
Sort of. And so it's hard often for juries to understand that.
Right.
Right? I mean, there's a phrase called blaming the victim.
Right.
Right? So, which is terrible.
And was widespread. I hope it's not today.
Right. I think things have changed. You know, you talked in your opening about how things have changed. And I think there's way more education and more understanding about it not being about the victim.
Well, it's a huge cultural change in terms of women's equality and awareness. So, you know, the women's movement has had quite a bit of success. We've got a long way to go. But one of the things about the whole blaming the victim, I remember a crucial case, and I think it was around the time we were forming Rape Relief. It was a very famous case of a rape where a woman walked into a pool hall or a bar to buy a pack of cigarettes, and they threw her on the billiard table, and she was gang raped. And at that time, much discussion about what... She asked for it because what was she walking into this place alone, you know, a male kind of dive at whenever, midnight. And I remember back then when it happened, there was actual discussion about whether or not she was partially to blame.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
It? Yeah.
And I hope, I don't think that attitude would prevail today. I hope not.
Right.
Okay, so the district attorney may or may not choose to prosecute the case.
And ideally they're speaking with the victim about that.
And when I say stranger, I don't mean, you know, you're walking in the park and he comes, rapes, and then disappears and you can't identify him. It could be, by stranger, I mean someone previously unknown to the victim. It could occur at a party.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, you can't even call that person an acquaintance. So do you think the police make are more likely to have a case against feel they have a case if there hasn't been a previous sexual relationship involved? Because it'd be pretty clear cut. Let's say physical evidence showed that there was had been sexual intercourse. There was forced sexual intercourse. Well, then, if with no history of a consensual relationship, it might be easier to prove.
I don't know.
Okay.
Really.
I mean, but it gets complex.
But I think it is complex, and it's neat that you're bringing up these complex issues because people have thoughts about them and biases. So it's interesting to bring it up so people can think about that. You know, hey, if it's a stranger, do I feel differently about it than if it's someone she dated previously?
Right. Of any contact, any friendship, anything like that.
Right.
Okay. When we were organizing advocates long ago at Rape Relief, we developed a rule, and it was that because some of our rape victims who we served wanted to become advocates.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a rule, and it was either a 10 or 15-year rule, that the rape had to be at least that far in the past, just so you would not be projecting your own experience onto the victim. Have you ever had any thoughts about that with your advocates?
We work with people, of course, and we have people who are volunteers and who work at AWARE who, of course, have histories of surviving victimization, of course, because number one, it's pervasive, and number two, many women who have survived want to be part of the change and part of the movement.
Mm-hmm.
And we screen to make sure, and ask the woman as well, to make sure that she can adequately provide the services that are needed.
Uh-huh.
And always to be checking ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. But you don't have like a year cut off or something like that. We were new.
Yeah.
We were new.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't have the subtlety, so we just kind of stuck like...
Right.
You know, because we knew if a recent rape victim wanted to be an advocate, we could still see, you know, we could see how deeply still impacted she was by the whole experience, and how that it would be impossible for her to sort of open-mindedly understand that people have different reactions to the experience. Right.
Yes. And what would come up for her if she's working with a rape victim?
It could really trigger.
So not only what she might bring to the person she's working with, but also what might come up for herself.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we're very deep in conversation, but this is a heavy conversation, and I think it would be very nice to take a short music break. And just to let you know, I'm talking to Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and we're talking about various aspects of sexual assault. Let's have some music. Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio is Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, Director of AWARE in Juneau. And we are talking about sexual assault, what it is, and how to help. And Sarah Lynn, I'm a fan of yours because I think you've done an amazing job at AWARE. And what's also amazing is that you've been working there for a long, long time. And a lot of people would think that working with so much suffering would burn you out. So tell me, how do you stay peppy and engaged?
It's about the healing, really. You know, I focus on the healing. And a lot of healing happens at AWARE.
Oh, it does.
And thank you for your kind words as well.
Oh, yeah. So you know, you've been director of AWARE for 13 years.
Yep.
And then you were in charge of the children's program
yes.
for several years. And you're a licensed therapist.
Yes.
Tell me, what and our listeners, what inspired you to work in this field?
I am inspired every day by the people who walk through our doors, by the people who are staying at AWARE. You know, it's not easy to ask for help for most of us. You know, we aren't able to ask for help. And to think of the courage it takes to call, pick up the phone and call AWARE or to walk through the doors, it's kind of amazing and beautiful.
And what inspired you in long ago, before you even started working at AWARE? How did you get involved in the whole field of battering and domestic violence and sexual assault?
Yeah, you know, I was very interested in what was happening, of course, socially and in society. And I was also studying to be a counselor. And one of my placements, because I was working with children, I love children, was at a middle school. And I was an intern at a middle school, and a child disclosed to me that her stepfather was molesting her. And I didn't know exactly what to do. I remember safety planning with her, like, how can you be safe? What can we do? And then I had to figure out what to do. You know, I didn't know about mandated reporting. So we're going back to the late 70s, early 80s. And I had to learn. And where I learned from, you know, I talked to some professors and I called a rape crisis center, Pittsburgh Action Against Rape. And they provided me with the best information so that I could move forward and address this how it needed to be addressed. And since then, I mean, that was kind of my introduction. I went there. I did an internship there. Subsequently, did some work there. And they were just such brilliant and beautiful people working to end violence against women and to support healing. I learned so much.
Yeah. What brought you to Juneau?
Juneau? You know, AWARE brought me to Juneau.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, they hired you. From
well, I was in Seattle, actually. I was so I left Pittsburgh, was in Seattle for a couple of years. And,
did you work in the same field?
I did, as I was volunteering at working with children.
Okay.
And getting paid to do other things. Mm-hmm. And there was a job in the newspaper, in the Seattle paper, for a job to provide counseling for kids who'd been sexually abused. I thought, oh, this is my career. Right? I had figured that out. So I applied for this job. I'll never forget, the interview happened in the Seattle airport as the then director of AWARE was passing through.
Was it Karen Robinson?
No, it was Rena Merkulieff.
Okay.
Who came after Karen.
Okay.
She was right after Karen. And her first question to me was, why do you want to live in Alaska? And I thought, I don't know if I want to live in Alaska, but I can't say
You're
that.
You're so honest.
Right? I'm not going to say that. So I said, what was true, ever since I was little, I always wanted to come to Alaska.
Good.
And then
it's true. And
right?
It's a good answer.
And here I am, almost 30 years later.
It's been 30.
In Juneau, still at AWARE.
So you came 30 years ago?
Well, not quite.
Okay. So then because I came about 33 years ago.
Okay.
And I started my private practice, and then had a contract to work half-time developing Aware Sexual Assault Program, because they didn't have one then. And I remember having sort of a similar experience, not with a little kid coming up to me, but it was before Aware had education, formal education in the schools. And so I just kind of was going in, and I remember I was at it wasn't called Yakutz then, but I was at the alternative high school, and I gave a talk on incest and sexual assault, and everybody looked like they were asleep. I mean, you know, it was before hoodies, but it was, you know, virtual hoodies down, like, boring, I don't want to listen to this. And then I said, you know, I was saying, talking about incest, I said, well, can any of you guess why people don't report? And all of a sudden the room came alive, and all these hands went up. And then I knew.
Oh.
Then I knew. Because they were deeply listening. Deeply, deeply listening. Or
yes.
Many of them were deeply listening.
Yes.
And when the hands went up, I knew. And that class, a girl came up to me and told me she was being molested, and she had never told anybody in that. You know, if people don't think education works, it really works.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you think, oh, wow, these problems are so deep. How could somebody going into the schools really change a whole culture or change a whole dysfunctional family or change whatever?
Right.
Or a victim mentality? Oh, no. I mean, the empowerment is huge. And then, you know, Seattle had a period where on the buses, do you remember they had signs about domestic violence and sexual abuse? And then I always go to the Atlin Music Festival, and it is attended by a lot of 20s, 30s. It's younger crowd, maybe even than the Alaska Folk Festival. You know, mainly coming in from Whitehorse and around. And they have, BC, British Columbia, has a wonderful program, because around prevention of sexual assault, and all the porta potties all around were signs. And this would bring up the whole thing about consent. Of really, really hammering it down. Because, you know, there was drinking. They have a beer tent. There's, you know, it's a classic place where sexual assault could occur.
Right.
I'm not saying it's rowdy because it's very family friendly. But, man, the signs that the BC government had, the Department of Health, talking about what is it here? Yes means yes. The absence, and they said this in so many words, the absence of a no doesn't mean yes. And they were talking about how consent is the presence of a clear, affirmative expression of interest, desire, and wants. The exchange of consent involves all parties. Each person sets their boundaries and shares their desire. And really talking, the whole context was, if just because you've had a sexual relationship with somebody in the past does not make them fair game. It's every sexual encounter requires an alert verbal yes. And they had signs, all had different messages, but aspects of this. And it included, if somebody is inebriated and can't respond, it does not mean a yes. That silence does not equal a yes. The only yes is when somebody verbally says yes to every process. So saying yes to kissing does not necessarily mean saying yes to intercourse.
Right.
Yeah. Beautiful. So they're doing a really good job.
Nice.
Do you work with is that any aspect of what you guys do?
Yeah, there is, and also working statewide with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, there's a consent campaign, perhaps I could call it, but right, consent is clear and verbal,
mm-hmm.
just what you said.
Right.
Right. Right.
So let's talk about, this brings in, you know, what is sexual abuse? And, you know, the caller the hypothetical caller wondering, if Uncle Jimmy touched my four-year-old on her chest, or he was wiggling her on his lap. Do you feel there's any gray areas? And we can talk about molestation of children. We can talk about rape, sexual assault of adults. Okay. What do you think? I mean, is there ever any confusion in your mind or in your clients' minds about whether they were sexually assaulted or not?
Yeah, I think there's lots of confusion.
Yeah.
You know, there really is lots of confusion. Sometimes people can't believe it, or they don't want to believe it, or they want to, or maybe it's a misunderstanding, or maybe by accident his hand went there, or, you know, there's all different explanations.
Yeah.
You know, rationalizations, which may be valid and they may not be valid, but, you know, it's hard to accept that someone intentionally is harming you or another person or a child, and yet sometimes someone is intentionally doing so.
Yeah. Because over the years, you know, various clients have looked back on their childhood, adult clients, and, you know, they would talk about the uncle who would press up against them, or the uncle or the grandpa who would kiss them on the lips and stick his tongue in their mouth, and that kind of thing. And so it really gets people thinking, okay, what was that about? I find it very interesting to take a look at the research that I've read on the impact of sexual abuse, and there are factors, apparently, that create more harm than others. Okay, so one factor I remember was outstanding. Whether or not, let's assume that the father, we'll take a case where the father molested the daughter. The daughter tells the mother. So what's key to her recovery is whether or not she's believed.
Yeah.
And so they took a look at, you know, a sample of adult women who had been sexually abused as children by relatives, and did they have an adult, particularly a parent,
right,
who believed them and did something about them, which has me remember, you know, one of my first assignments with AWARE was leading the non-offending parents group.
Yeah.
I led the incest survivors group, and I led the non-offending parents group, which was all mothers.
Right.
But they were only the mothers who believed.
Uh-huh.
And I have worked with many situations over the decades I've been in practice of where the mother, if it was a father who was the abuser, chose the father over the daughter.
Uh-huh.
Even when, sometimes, when the case went to court and the father was found guilty.
Mm.
So do you have any groups for non-offending parents?
You know, we don't right now. We have from time to time offered time-limited groups, but now we offer more of a support group environment, and the support can be around different issues, but not necessarily that.
Yeah, well, in a town of 30,000, it's really hard to get enough, you know, people in that category. What about sexual assault survivor groups or incest victim survivor groups? Do you do that anymore?
We don't have those right now. You know, a lot of what I'm thinking about and what you're talking about is about healthy boundaries. You know, so how do you know? You know, we all know what our boundaries are, or do we? We might not. You know, if our boundaries are negated when we're young, then we don't learn that we can have boundaries. If I don't learn, I'm the boss of me.
Right.
It's my body.
Yeah.
Then whose body is it, and who has access, and how do we stop that? And if we've never been taught to say no, right, how on earth are we supposed to say no at a most difficult time like a sexual assault?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, if something doesn't feel comfortable, and it doesn't necessarily have to be abusive, it can be too much tickling, which I don't like that, or whatever, but really to honor children's experience.
Yeah.
In our own experience.
Yeah. Do you find that there seems to be, I don't know if this is statistically correct, but that there may be a disproportionate number of the women who reside at your shelter who were there because they were physically abused, right? They were battered.
Or right? Sexually.
Or sexually abused.
Yeah, or
that,
both.
That they have a history of molestation as a child. Do you see any connection between the two? Because it's a boundary. I'm going back to boundaries.
Right. Well, I think there is something to that. You know, to having your boundaries crossed and disrespected,
mm-hmm.
that you have to learn how to create boundaries and how to honor them yourself.
Well, and if you grow up,
if
you grow up in a family where you're being sexually abused and nothing is done, and your father is the abuser,
right?
Obviously, you're growing up in a very, very difficult situation, and are much more likely to be attracted to an adult male when you're dating, who may also be harsh or abusive. And there's a lot of data to show that.
Right. And a man who's looking for someone he can victimize recognizes the vulnerability, right? A woman who, mm-hmm. or a person who's not able to set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So he can really choose someone
it fits. It really fits together. And would you like to do you still talk about grooming and how, especially in cases of incest, or mainly in cases of ancestor child molestation, grooming occurs?
Sure.
Okay. Would you kind of explain that to us?
Yeah. Grooming refers to preparing a child for sexual abuse. So it may be treating a child special, perhaps giving her presents, maybe tickling her, holding her a little bit closer, treating her special, and then slowly, over time, moving into touching, maybe at first not, it might not be a part of her bathing suit covers, but maybe just lingering too long. So really, like developing a relationship, or trying to develop a relationship that builds to abuse of a child.
Mm-hmm. And what about threats? Threats, that's something terrible. Because you could really convince a five-year-old, for example.
Right.
With an authority figure.
Right. So right. Why a child might not tell? You know, when you asked that question and all those hands went up. You know, kids are told lies and they're told truths. So a child molester might say to them, if you tell, I'll go to jail. Well, that might be true, right? But if I go to jail, your mom's going to be real upset. And so are you, and it's going to be your fault.
And we won't have any money.
And on and on. Or they may say, if you tell, you won't be believed. Nobody's going to believe you. You're 5 years old, and I'm a grown-up.
Yeah.
I have a job. If you tell, I'm going to kill you. Or something terrible is going to happen to your parents. Yes. So a lot of threats, fear, really building on fear that a child believes,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah. Do you feel there's a relationship between alcoholism in the family and a higher incidence of sexual abuse?
You know, as with domestic violence, alcohol, I don't think causes abuse. In fact, it doesn't. However, it can be used as an excuse. You know, it's because I was drinking. Or, oh my gosh, this never would have happened if I hadn't been drinking. But come on, you know, take some responsibility. This is your responsibility for drinking.
What I'd like to do is take a short music break and then start talking about recovery and talk about the things that are possible and that it's not an impossible thing to lead a whole and healthy life, but it takes a lot of work if you've been a victim or survivor of sexual assault. So let's have a little more music.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and I'm having a very fascinating conversation with Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. And as a matter of fact, we have so much to talk about concerning sexual assault that I'm going to invite her back for another month, and she's agreed to come. And Sarah Lynn is the director of AWARE in Juneau. I just found out, I didn't know she was doing this, but not she, but AWARE. They have sexual assault. They have sexual defense classes. What? Tell me about that.
Well, we offer in partnership with the Juno Shotokan Karate the self defense class for women, and it happens to be this Saturday.
Oh wow!
Right. So it's at Mountainside Wellness Center, which is that located downtown. People can register by calling AWARE at 586-6623. We ask for a $5 fee. Bring a sack lunch, wear comfortable clothes. It's from 10 to 4. And the class is designed to strengthen a woman's presence as she moves through the world. Right?
Yes.
And Diana Stevens is the karate master. And she leads the training with trained assistants so that teens and women will learn how to protect their boundaries and how, if they need to, escape, how to escape quickly and effectively.
Okay.
Great.
Well, you know, that is a good segue into talking about recovery. So if you or someone close to you has been a victim of incest or sexual abuse or sexual assault, there are pathways to healing. And I would always recommend that everyone take, every woman take a self-defense class. And this is only one day, and I think that's terrific, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's really focused on that kind of thing. You don't have to become an expert at karate. But I've taken it.
Yeah.
And early on, AWARE would bring trainers up. I remember that. They bring trainers up, women trainers, and I think we took two-day sessions. And did I learn stuff.
Right?
Oh, my God. It has me feel, even when I'm traveling alone, it has me feel so much more powerful. So,
and did you learn how to scream?
I don't think we did screaming.
Oh.
I remember doing this, you know, blocking.
Uh-huh.
I remember blocking. But I would recommend to anybody with a history of assault or sexual assault to take a class like that, just one day. And it really, really, you learn a lot of tricks. But what's this screaming thing?
It's about how to scream.
Because yeah.
Screaming, if you scream, it will scare somebody away.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and you may be speechless, but if you've trained to scream,
exactly.
All it is training those neurons so that your reaction,
right.
When somebody, well, I'll tell you something that happened to me. So when I was a grad student at University of Washington, I was walking in twilight home, probably from class, and a guy jumped out of the bushes and pulled his pants down. Now, okay, I wasn't particularly scared he was going to assault me because his pants were around his ankle. And I am steeped at this time in sexual assault awareness because we had started Rape Relief. I was instinctive. Immediately I dove for him. I was going to, rather than run away and scream, actually, I didn't scream. I wanted to catch him. And I chased him And I was hoping for a cop car to come by. And because what was in me is all the pent up desire to solve this problem. And finally, it was a government car that was like Forest Service, and I stopped him, and I pointed to the guy, and the guy ran through, you know, a bunch of lawns, and he was never caught. But I will tell you that because I had thought so much about sexual assault and worked on that topic, my instinct was to go for the jugular. Anyway, you're a therapist. Aware provides services. I'm a therapist. I'm in private practice. What kind of help in private practice? You know, not everybody has insurance. It's expensive.
Right.
So what kind of help is available for someone?
Well, you know, I think what's so key, and you brought this up when you talked about being in the classroom and the student who came up to you afterwards and disclosed, is in speaking and saying what happened. You know, holding secrets inside or holding experiences and feelings and thoughts inside, not being able to externalize them, does a lot of damage.
And it's so safe to speak to a therapist because you know it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
And that just to be able to have someone listen, not blame you, and what I've noticed is when I've worked with women who got help early on, whether they're incest victims or rape victims, but very early on, and maybe I'm working with them on another issue, 20 years later, I can see the difference that they are really so healed from that experience.
Right.
Compared to if they had not gotten immediate help.
Yeah.
And immediate help means immediate therapy.
So being able to tell, you know, calling on the crisis line confidentially, telling, being believed.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, we're winding up. I want to thank Sarah Lynn Tabachnik from Aware for coming in this evening. It's a beautiful evening. I think it may only be drizzling. And so please come and tune in. A month from now, approximately, and I'm going to be have a subject on health and wellness, and with a personal trainer who's done a lot of work on holistic health. I want to thank the Kramers, John and Dolly, who always multitask beautifully throughout the show, and they really listen. Good night.
From the heart of nature.